Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines, Book 1, Rebel Dream, by Aaron Alston. Read for you by Alexander Adams. A god cannot die, Jarrett Krall said. Therefore, it can have no fear of death. So who is braver, a god or a mortal? Jarrett Krall was a pilot of the Yuuzhan Vong, humanoid, a little over 2 meters in height. His skin, where it was not covered by geometric tattoos, was pale, marked everywhere by the white lines of old scars. Some years ago, a mishap had eaten away the center of his face, eliminating even the diminutive nose common to the Yuuzhan Vong, leaving behind brown-crusted cartilage and horizontal holes into his sinus passages. His forehead angled back less dramatically than many of the Yuuzhan Vong, and looked a trifle more like the forehead of a human, for which 2 warriors had taunted him, for which he had killed them. He wore an Ooglith cloaker, the transparent environment suit of Yuuzhan Vong pilots, over a simple warrior's loincloth. He sat in the cockpit of his coral skipper, the irregular rock-like space fighter of his kind, but he did not wear his cognition hood at the moment. The mask-like creature that kept him in mental contact with his craft, that allowed him to sense with its senses and pilot it with the agility of thought rather than muscle and reaction, was set to the side while his coral skipper cruised on routine patrol. He and his mission partner, Penzac Krall, were in distant orbit above the world Borleas. The planet had been recently seized from the infidels native to this galaxy, so that it could be used as a staging area for the Yuuzhan Vong assault on the galactic throne world of Coruscant. Borleas was an agreeably green world, not overgrown with the dead, crusty dwellings of the humans. Only a human military base, now smashed, had affronted the Yuuzhan Vong with evidence of infidel occupation. The voice of Penzac Krall emerged from the small head-shaped villip mounted on the cockpit wall just beneath the canopy.
Don't be an idiot. If a god is the god of bravery, then by definition, he must be braver than any Yuuzhan Vong, than anything living.
I wonder, if you could never face death, could you then be as brave as the Yuuzhan Vong?
Who cares? The choice is not ours. But if I were to choose, I think I would choose immortality. Live long enough, and you might learn how to be brave as a Yuuzhan Vong again. Kill long enough, and you could perhaps learn to kill a star.
Jarrett Krall sobered. I have heard...
What?
That the infidels did that. Learned to kill a star. Penzac Krall hissed in irritation.
So what if they did? They killed it the wrong way, with their wrong minds and their wrong devices. And like idiots, they must have lost the secret, or they'd be destroying the world ships one by one.
I have also heard... Jarrett Krall lowered his voice, a foolish instinct since no one but Penzac Krall could be listening to him, that gods may smile upon them, too, on the infidels.
Ridiculous.
In the distance, an enemy battleship winked into existence, its bow pointed toward them. It grew rapidly as it neared them, as it approached Borleas.
The enemy approaches.
Penzac Krall's villip blurred and adjusted, reflecting a change to Penzac's features. He had pulled on his cognition hood. Jarrett did likewise. His surroundings, the cockpit interior, seemed to become transparent, giving him a view in all directions through the eyes of the coral skipper, showing him in breathtaking detail the onrushing enemy ship. No, now it was ships. More and more of the loathsome things of metal were dropping out of hyperspace, all aimed at Borleas, at Cheret and Penzac. The foremost New Republic ship, a sharply angled triangle in white, passed over the two coral skippers, blotting out the sun, casting them into shadow. Penzac Crawl sent his coral skipper into a dive and turned to match the larger craft's course. Cheret paced him. Above, he saw thruster gouts from the ship's belly herald the launching of the hated infidel's starfighters.
How do we hurt them worst?
Cheret asked.
Follow me in, Penzac said. While they're launching, don't engage the fighters. Bait them so they follow us. The ship won't fire on us with the fighters in close proximity. We'll enter their launching bays and destroy the facilities there, then gut the ship from within.
He looped around, rising and angling in toward the ship's belly. Cheret followed. Mon Mothma, one of the newest cruisers in the New Republic's fleet, cruised straight toward Borleas from the point where it had dropped out of hyperspace. And now before them was the blue-green world they had come to recapture. No sign of a Yuuzhan Vong world ship in orbit, reported the sensor officer. Two coral skippers are turning to engage. General Wedge Antilles, a lean man with a careworn face and military posture, commander of the fleet group for which Mon Mothma was the flagship, nodded. Gunnery, stay on them. Vape them if they come against us. Fighter control, continue launching starfighter squadrons. Data screens lit up with colored blips as New Republic starfighters, X-wings, A-wings, and more, streamed out of the docking bays and turned toward the planet. Luke Skywalker hit his thrusters. His X-wing roared out of Mon Mothma's main docking bay. Behind him, 11 pilots of Twin Sun Squadron, the temporary squad that was his command, formed up on him. Twin Sun's away, he said.
Twin Sun's copy.
That would be the controller on Mon Mothma's bridge.
Be advised, two coral skippers are maneuvering into your flight path.
Luke glanced at his sensor display. Two red blips were indeed turning from below to head toward them. Squadron, follow me out. Let's give these two the gauntlet treatment.
Copy that, Luke.
He heard a chorus of acknowledgments. All his pilots were veterans, survivors of the Sabres, the Screamers, and other squadrons that had been reduced to shield trios, wing pairs, and solo pilots during the Yuuzhan Vong attack on Coruscant a mere day earlier. Two of them, forming with him a shield trio, were his wife, Mara Jade Skywalker, and the Corellian security officer turned pilot turned Jedi named Corran Horn. He extended his perceptions and sought Mara with them. He found her and almost flinched away from the contact. She was now an icy presence, concentrated totally on their mission. He shrugged. Iciness was better than one alternative. The Yuuzhan Vong, aided by their human agent Vicky Shesh, had almost managed to kidnap his and Mara's infant son Ben just hours earlier, and it would be no surprise to find Mara lit like a lightsaber with a desire for revenge. The fact that she wasn't meant that she was in control. S-foils to attack position, Luke said. And suited action to words by flipping the switch that split the X-Wing's flight surfaces into their familiar X-shaped attack profile. First and third trios, take the leader, the rest on the wingmate. Fire at will. He linked his lasers to quad fire, so that all four would fire with a single press of the trigger, and opened up on the lead coral skipper. Four red streams of destructive laser energy lanced out against the coral skipper. No, it was eight streams. Luke's burst, aimed at the starboard side of the skip, never reached its target. A blackness appeared before it, distorting space around it, drawing the laser fire into it. Those four red lances of energy simply bent and disappeared. But Mara's burst, aimed at the port side, hit the coral skipper an instant after Luke's vanished. He grinned. She must have been using her own force abilities to monitor him as well. She couldn't have timed it so expertly otherwise. Her lasers raked across the enemy starfighter's hull until the distortion flicked over to interpose itself. Then Luke fired again, chipping away at the coral skipper's stern. Luke's blasts were joined by Corin's. The coral-like material of the skip's hull superheated. The lasers tore red-hot gouges along the surface. Luke sent his X-Wing into evasive maneuvers, moving back and forth, up and down with the randomness of a flying insect. He saw his target's counterattack, a glowing missile from the coral skipper's plasma cannon, flash by to port. Far enough away to be no danger to himself, Mara, or Corin.
They're not engaging.
That was Twin Suns 11.
Turning to pursue.
Luke saw the blips of Twin Suns 4 through 6 and 10 through 12 turning back, following the coral skippers straight in toward Mon Mothma. Luke felt a little tingle, but whether a warning from the Force or from his own years of combat experience, he could not tell. Negative. Break off, he said. Do not engage. Twin Suns, turn to original course and form up on record time. Mon Mothma, these skips are yours.
Copy, Twins One.
Luke turned back toward Borleas, saw his pilots breaking off from pursuit of the coral skippers and maneuvering to form up with the squadron. The moment his fighters were clear of the coral skippers, Mon Mothma's laser cannons opened up. One of the coral skippers was destroyed instantly. The other sustained a grazing impact and spun away from Mon Mothma, retreating from the engagement zone. Luke formed his fighters up in an assault wedge in front of Record Time. Record Time was an armed troop transport. The vessel looked impossibly vulnerable, impossibly fragile. But its captain owner, a private trader, a smuggler, Luke believed, had volunteered its use to General Antilles during the fall of Coruscant, claiming it was the fastest, toughest vessel of its type. Now its bay was clear of trade goods and filled with soldiers instead. Luke's comm unit hissed, then a woman's voice.
Record Time to Twin Suns leader. All set.
Twin Suns to Record Time. You set the pace. The transport surged forward. Luke brought his X-Wing up in front of the freighter's bridge. Mara and Corin settled in with him. Another shield trio dropped back to the port side of Record Time, a third to the starboard side, and the last astern of the transport. Luke heard Colonel Gavin Darklighter's voice over the operation channel.
Rogue Squadron to Borleas. We're back. We kicked your butt 20 years ago. Now we're here to do it again.
Luke grinned. Squadrons of coral skippers were climbing to their altitude by the time Twin Sun's squadron began its descent into atmosphere. The skips opened up with their plasma cannons, life forms that spewed superheated materials that could eat through a starfighter's hull as soon as they came within range. Break and engage. Cover the transport, Luke commanded, and suited action to words. He spun out in a rapid descent and opened fire, trusting his wingmates to stay with him, to fire out of phase with him and at different portions of his target to overload and baffle the Dubin Basal. This time, the creature defending his target skip intercepted Mara's shot, fired from slightly below the skip's center line, but couldn't whip the void around fast enough to counter Luke's and Corin's shots, which scoured the Yorick coral all around the pilot's canopy. Then the three of them were well below their targets and rising again behind the coral skipper's sterns. The skip's void swung around, hovering at the sterns, ready to soak up infinite amounts of weapon energy. Mara surged ahead of Luke and Corin, flying in a pattern that was oddly predictable, and drew fire from both coral skippers. She became suddenly erratic in her flight, as random as only force skills could make a pilot, and flashed ahead until she was just behind the skips. She sideslipped to port, and as both streams of plasma cannon fire followed her, the fire from the starboard skip crossed the body of the portside skip. Two balls of fire thudded into the skip's belly before the starboard pilot compensated. The port skip's void whipped around to shield the skip's belly. In that instant, Mara drop-fired a quad-linked burst of laser fire. The skip detonated, hiding Mara's X-Wing from sight for a moment. And Luke fired a laser stutter burst at the starboard skip's underside. He hoped that the pilot's confusion at having hurt his own wingmate, along with the Dovin Basel's effort to shield this skip from the damage from Mara's attack, would leave it momentarily vulnerable. He was right. His lasers hit the skip's underside and chewed through. He checked his board. Two skips down. Mara was coming around to rejoin him and Corin. Diagnostics said his X-Wing was undamaged. "Good tactics, Mara," he said.
"You always know the sweet thing to say."
Luke grinned and came around toward a new set of opponents. Starfighter squadrons held the Yuuzhan Vong response to 3 points of conflict in orbit. The Twin Suns group took advantage of the opportunity and roared down through the atmosphere and banked toward the Coral Skipper's launch point, which had been detected on gravitic sensors. It was, not coincidentally, the same map coordinate as Borleas's New Republic military base. As they dropped low over the jungle canopy, Luke could make out the target zone ahead. Small chips of Yorick coral were rising above it, angling toward them. His sensors said there were 6 of them. "Twin Suns, up front," Luke said. "Engage all those skips. Record time, it's your call whether you want to hang back with us or move on to the target without us."
"Twin Suns 1, this is record time. We're here to fight. We'll see you at the landing zone."
"Copy." Lando Calrissian, in record time's troop bay, stood next to the ramp access and tried to look infinitely cool, infinitely in control. He looked over his troops. They stood in a circle, each with a hand on the metal post at the circle's center, and stared at him. They were impassive, fearless. "Ready?" he asked. In unison, they answered, "Ready, sir." After the last lurch and vibration, Lando knew the transport was down. He could barely hear over the system's alarms. He took a last deep breath and nodded at his troops, then slapped the button on the hull panel beside him. The top portion of the entry slid instantly up out of sight. The bottom portion lowered, becoming a ramp. Warm, humid air flooded into the troop bay. Beyond the entryway was field, its stringy grasses calf high, and beyond that was some sort of reddish Yuuzhan Vong construction. A large cylindrical building with arms radiating outward at regular intervals. "Go, go, go!" Lando shouted, and his troops released the bar they'd been holding. They surged for the ramp, readying blaster rifles. As they reached the top of the ramp, incoming fire began to rain in. Lando heard the rear wall of the bay ring as ammunition pocketed. No, it wasn't ammunition, he reminded himself, but creatures hurled by the Yuuzhan Vong. Thud bugs, the hard-hitting insect projectiles, and razor bugs, which sliced whatever they hit and came around again to attack whatever they missed. One of his troops took a concentration of thud bugs, several of them hitting him in the throat. The force of the impacts was enough to shear through. That soldier's body collapsed and his head clanked to the bay floor, rolling unerringly toward Lando. Lando stopped it with his foot like a player trapping a ball, and looked dispassionately at it. His first casualty of the day. The combat droid's features stared up at him. The unhurt droid troops charged down the ramp and into the field, turning to head toward the right flank of the Yuuzhan Vong base. They began a war cry now, made up of words that Lando didn't understand, but he knew what they meant. He'd arranged for them to be installed in his droid troops. The words were in the language of the Yuuzhan Vong, and they meant, "We are machines. We are greater than the Yuuzhan Vong." On the bridge of the record time, the communications officer said, "Captain, it's working. They're breaking cover, showing themselves." The captain, a tall human woman, extracted herself from her chair and moved to stand over the officer's shoulder. On the screen was a panoramic view of the ground all around the record time, jungle to port and open field to starboard. Lando Calrissian's droid troops were off the ramp and charging across the field, firing in a defensive screen all around them. And Yuuzhan Vong warriors were popping up all over the field, emerging from the jungle at a dead run, heading toward the droids, ignoring the transport. "Transmit this visual to all vehicles and vessels in our engagement zone," the captain said. "Transmit to Mon Mothma the..." Oh, Stang. On the screen, something huge was approaching from the far side of the Yuuzhan Vong building, moving around it. This was a living creature, vaguely reptilian, itself the size of a large building. From the spine grew huge sail-like plates, and plasma cannons protruded by the dozens from Yura coral everywhere. The captain's voice rose into a commander's bellow. "Get the troops off this ship now! Non-essential personnel, follow the troops off! All weapons come to bear on that target! Fire at will!" Luke, Mara, and Corrin took a high-speed run over the base area, giving them a split-second view of the Yuuzhan Vong building, of the record time, of the tremendous beast hurling plasma into the transport side. Luke sighed. The last time he'd faced one of these enormous beasts, which Jaina Solo had nicknamed a range, the tactic he'd used to destroy it had knocked him out for hours. He couldn't afford to do that now. "Let's do what we can to distract the thing from the ground troops." He led Mara and Corrin in a tight loop back toward the engagement zone. The living troops poured out of record time's base. Lando steered his droid bodyguard, YVH-11A, in the wake of his main body of troops, while the others surged toward the main Yuuzhan Vong building. Ahead, his droids were sustaining heavy incoming fire. Now the beast was visible around the building's edge. Its muscles rippled. The plasma cannons all over its back tilted, taking aim. Directly toward Lando, it seemed to him. He dropped to the ground and elbow crawled forward, chanting, "I'm too old for this. I'm a businessman. I'm too old for this. I want a drink." He crawled into a circle of troops before he knew it. Six of them, five humans and a Twi'lek, only three of them with shoulder arms. "Where are your blasters?" he asked. The Twi'lek, the red-skinned female, huddled against the mound of her pack. "We're engineers." Lando fired at the legs of the giant creature lumbering in their direction. "Engineers?" Lando asked. "With explosives?" The woman nodded. "You're hiding behind your explosives?" She nodded again, her dismayed expression suggesting that she understood the insanity of it. "Dig," Lando said. "A shallow hole, large enough to put all those explosives in." They had the hole dug, and three engineers' worth of explosives loaded into it in less than a standard minute. The eight of them crawled away from the hole and toward the record time. The Twi'lek woman wasn't crawling. She was flat on her back toward the rear of the column, fiddling with a remote detonator, while Lando's droid dragged her by the feet. The droid kept up sustained fire aimed behind them toward the range. Lando, elbow crawling at the head of the column, heard the roar of the returning X-wings. He knew their attacks on the beast were futile, but was grateful for their strafing runs, which had kept him and this unit from falling under constant fire.
"Got it,"
said the Twi'lek engineer. "Get ready," Lando said. "We'll try to time it to the wing's next pass if they're back in time." Lando twisted around. The giant creature behind them had picked up speed, charging the record time. The Twi'lek engineer had the detonator in her hand, her thumb over the button.
"Wait,"
Lando said. She turned an anguished expression toward him, but didn't argue. The roar of the returning X-wings began to rattle everyone and everything in the field. Lando watched the skies with a small part of his attention and kept the rest on the oncoming creature. Its main body was moving into place above the disturbed ground that marked the location of the buried cache of explosives. The X-wing roar rose in volume, and the plasma cannons on the beast diverted their streams of fire from the record time into the air. He saw red lasers flash down into the blackness of the beast's voids. Then, the snub fighters were gone, the plasma cannons sending fiery destruction after them.
"Now!" Lando shouted.
He didn't even see the woman press the button. He was aware only of the fire, reddish-yellow, roiling out from under the beast. It engulfed the creature and slammed Lando with heat and noise. He buried his face in the grass to escape it. A moment later, he could look again. The creature was down on its side, its belly ripped and blackened by the force of the explosion. The situation was largely under control by the time Wedge descended to the planet's surface in his shuttle. He made a pass over the site of what had been the Borleas New Republic base. Once upon a time, it had been an Imperial base, housing TIE fighters and stormtroopers, charged with the duty of defending a nearby biological research facility managed by the Imperial General Ever Derakote. Then Rogue Squadron, at the time commanded by Wedge himself, had come as the spearhead of a mission that had wrested control of the world from Derakote. The Imperial base had become a Rebel Alliance base, and then, once the Rebels had taken Coruscant and become the legitimate government in this part of the galaxy, a new Republic base. Now, it was rubble. He keyed his comlink. "Rogue One, this is Antilles. Give me an escort. We're going to visit the biotics facility."
"Will do."
A few moments later, two X-Wings, one belonging to Gavin Darklighter and the other to his wingmate, Craw Neville, maneuvered to flank him. Wedge heeled about toward the biotics facility and hit his thrusters. Not long after, he hovered over the site of that base. General Derakote's biotics facility was a long, single building. The whole thing seemed to be a gigantic wedge whose sharp edge pointed at the sky. It had been used to engineer a deadly disease, the Krytos virus, which afflicted and killed members of non-human species. From this height, Wedge could see that the building was still intact, though the jungle had grown right up to it. Wedge transmitted a holocam view of the site, adding coordinates to the data stream accompanying the transmission. "Mon Mothma, this will be our ground facility. I want the jungle burned away for a kilometer around on the north, east, and south faces, 2 kilometers to the west. With escaped Yuuzhan Vong in the jungle, I want a substantial kill zone. The field immediately west will be our landing zone." A day later, the biotics building was secure and operational. Luke, returning from a perimeter sweep in which they'd encountered no Yuuzhan Vong, but suspected from the behavior of Borleas's animal life that Yuuzhan Vong were out there, learned that Wedge had requested his presence at a general meeting of his senior officers and personal allies. He joined the crowd in the biotics building's ground floor mess hall. Mara was already there, baby Ben in her arms. Luke headed for a seat beside her, but Wedge waved him up to the head of the table, to the other seat beside him.
Luke gave Mara a smile of apology and moved to sit by Wedge.
Our stay here is going to be short, Wedge said to the entire assembly. But it's going to be longer than we like. There's going to be more fighting. I'd like to have some tricks up our sleeves to offer the Yuuzhan Vong when they come, so I want you to be thinking about it. And keep in mind that now's not the time to think conservatively. A naval officer Luke did not know, a woman in a lieutenant's uniform, spoke up.
General, why do we want to stay here at all? The Yuuzhan Vong garrison here has to have alerted their commanders that they were being overrun. The Vong will be coming.
Wedge nodded. Well, there are several reasons. The first is this. It's inevitable that many refugees fleeing Coruscant, or arriving there and suddenly discovering that the Yuuzhan Vong have taken it, will be coming here as the first stage of their escapes. Someone needs to help them. Second, we need to catch our collective breaths. We left Coruscant with just the ships on our backs. We need to take stock and calculate the enormity of the disaster that we've just experienced.
Wedge's face, for a moment, expressed a pang of pain, and Luke felt it too.
Wedge hadn't been able to get in touch with his wife, Yella, or daughters, Sial and Miri, before duty had forced him to leave Coruscant. Not knowing what had happened to them had to be eating at him.
Wedge swallowed hard, then his features were schooled once again into impassivity, and he continued.
Third and last, it's a morale issue. Our people have just taken a tremendous kick in the teeth, the loss of Coruscant. We're going to kick in return. If we dig in our heels here and slap the Yuuzhan Vong across the face, it may do some harm to their morale. It may do some good for ours. Now, Colonel Darklighter, I want to keep Rogue Squadron on high guard in Borlaos orbit for the time being.
Yes, sir.
Captain Devis, I want at least two ships with good sensor systems on station in the Coruscant-Borlaos approach corridor. Place the ships where our projections tell us a Yuuzhan Vong sortie might drop out of hyperspace. Lando, you'll act as quartermaster. Booster, you're in charge of communications. Make sure we make the best use of whatever equipment we have on hand and coordinate it through the errant venture. And if you can, help Cam and Tion keep the Jedi children safe. Danny, is Danny Kui here?
I'm here.
Luke saw a hand waving from the back.
You're in charge of just about everything Yuuzhan Vong. Analyze anything we can get our hands on. Tycho, you're in charge of starfighter forces. I remain in direct command of Space Navy forces.
Luke, I want you in charge of special forces, special operations.
Mara, I know this is a lot to ask of a woman with a small baby.
Mara straightened, holding Ben to her.
Trust me, my capacity for mayhem is undiminished.
Wedge's smile broadened.
I didn't spot any ranking intelligence officers in that crowd. I'd appreciate it if you could act as our intelligence head for the time being. When we get in an officer from intelligence, you can move over to Luke's Department of Special Forces.
Wedge clapped his hands together sharply. All right, people, let's move.
The crowd dispersed with military rapidity.
Luke turned to Mara.
Come on, let's find out what sort of resources special operations and intelligence can put together. And we need to find someone who can babysit while we're off raising mayhem.
They were two members of the Praetorite Vong, two guards assigned to march her to her last interview, assigned to conduct her to the meeting where she would be condemned to death. She was Vicky Shesh, once the senator representing Kuat before the New Republic. She had for a long time also been a spy for the Yuuzhan Vong. Long and faithfully had she served her new masters, but long and faithful service hadn't meant much to them. As the Yuuzhan Vong invasion of Coruscant had begun, she had attempted to carry out her latest assignment, the kidnapping of Ben, the infant son of Luke and Mara Jade Skywalker, and had failed. Until then, she'd confidently anticipated receiving great rewards from the Yuuzhan Vong for her service and effort. Instead,
She had been arrested and hustled up to the world ship of Savang La, supreme war master of the Yuuzhan Vong. They reached a large oval chamber. Its floor sloped downward in a gentle curve, its lowest point being a circular opening some 3 meters across. The opening surrounded blackness. Vicky found she could not focus on the darkness. It seemed fuzzy somehow, rising above the level of the floor a quarter of a meter or more. Beside the pit stood Savang La, the great planner and guiding light of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion of this galaxy. He was a heavily scarred and tattooed example of high-ranking Yuuzhan Vong. His left arm had been replaced at the elbow by a rayant leg, all reddish scales and spines, with fingers that were segmented and articulated in a manner not natural for Yuuzhan Vong or human. Small black dots, carrion eaters, swarmed around the attachment. She repressed a shudder. The guards and Vicky came to a halt before Savang La. He turned to fix his stare on her.
"You may feel honored," the War Master said. "It is not customary for one of my position to witness the disposal of waste."
She looked at him, then again at the pit overfull of darkness. In the blur of that darkness, at its edges, she saw motion that seemed suddenly familiar. It was identical to that of the little black dots, the carrion eaters, that infested Savang La's arm. She concealed a sensation of revulsion.
"This is the fate you've chosen for me?"
"Yes."
The War Master gestured at one of her guards.
"The Nuaku will kill you. Then your body will be tossed into the pit. The creatures there will then fall on it, slowly eating it away to nothingness."
Vicky's stomach knotted, but she kept her expression calm, emotionless.
"Why don't I just jump in? That way, these two nameless nothings beside me don't get to participate."
She could sense anger in the increasing stiffness of her guard's postures, but Savang La merely widened his eyes and looked a bit surprised.
"You are anxious to provide compensation for your failure?"
"Of course. I will do it this way if it is what you require. It is my obligation to serve. But I am more anxious for you to stop lying to me. To end that particular torture, I'll jump in right now."
"Lying? An interesting accusation."
Savang La smiled.
"I say you are lying for this reason. You are not disposing of me because I failed you. Others have failed you and been permitted to live. You're having me put to death because you think I'm no longer valuable to you, no longer a resource."
To the extent that they could, Savang La's features became thoughtful.
"I am impressed. You make your point. I am killing you because you are no longer a resource, Vicky."
"But I am. My most powerful weapon is still with me, War Master. My brain. I have uncovered a threat to your control of the Yuuzhan Vong, to your plans for this galaxy. You are in danger you don't even know about. Only I have uncovered the secret."
"Name it, then."
"No."
She looked at her guards.
"Not while these unworthy ones can hear my words."
Savang La gestured. Vicky's guards took her by her arms and, seemingly without effort, lifted her. They held her over the pit. Black dots leapt up from it, settling on her feet and lower legs.
"Anything you have to tell me, they can hear,"
Savang La said. Vicky returned her gaze to his. She was able to keep the fear she felt out of her voice.
"You and I are the only ones in this chamber I know are not your enemies. I will not betray you, so drop me."
She made her expression fierce. Savang La considered her for a long moment, then made a shooing gesture to his guards. They withdrew a step, bringing Vicky back over solid flooring, and released her. Then they turned and left the chamber.
Vicky felt the first faint stirrings of hope. She was in charge of this situation.
Savang La regarded her steadily.
Well? Your body rejects its latest modification, she said, her words coming out in a rush. You believe it's your gods telling you to figure out the correct path to their approval, but that's not what's happening. You're being betrayed, War Master, by the Shapers. They've put a faulty limb on you. It threatens to turn you into a shamed one. Soon, they'll start recommending courses of action to you. Military action, political action. When you start doing what they say, the problems with your limb will diminish. But any time you fail to do as the Shapers demand, new problems will begin. You're going to be their slave, War Master.
In her cell, she had used her skills of fabricating and anticipating treachery, not to figure out the source of the problems afflicting Savang La, but to concoct an accusation that explained all of them. A story that would take time and effort to disprove. She would use that time to find some way to escape the Yuuzhan Vong.
An interesting notion, the War Master said. What if you are wrong?
I am not wrong. Vicky gave him her most unconcerned expression.
I just ask for the opportunity to see my theory proven right. Kill me then, if you choose. At least I'll die victorious.
Savang La regarded her for long moments. Then he nodded to himself.
We will see.
He called out a few words in his language, and the guards returned to flank Vicky. At the War Master's gesture, the guards led her back out the door. Every step was more distance between her and the pit. Every step was a drumbeat accompanying the words that pulsed through her mind.
I live. I live. I still live.
Wedge's comlink beeped, awakening him. His office was dark. He'd fallen asleep before making it back to his temporary quarters. He grabbed his comlink and held it up before him.
Go.
He rubbed sleep from his eyes and wondered how many minutes of rest he'd had.
General, this is Mon Mothma. One of our wing pair patrols reports a transport with fighter escort arriving in system.
Yuuzhan Vong or refugee?
Neither, sir. Its communications officer says it's the official transport of the New Republic Advisory Council.
Wedge frowned. It was inconceivable that the Advisory Council was still functioning in any capacity. Until the fall of Coruscant, they'd been Chief of State Borsk Felya's hand-picked advisors, a lubricating layer between him and the grinding machinery of government. But with Felya's death during Coruscant's fall and the collapse and flight of the New Republic Senate, Wedge had guessed that the Advisory Council would have been scattered to the space routes. Have they done anything other than request clearance to land?
Yes, sir. They've, requested a meeting with you and your general staff as soon as possible. They say they've brought your orders.
Wedge made a face, as if he needed interference from a now irrelevant group of politicians. All right. Set up two starfighter squadrons in a circle illuminating a landing field well away from the facility.
Yes, sir.
Wedge rose with an uneasy feeling, one that had come to him every time politicians had a surprise for him, one that had almost never been proven false. When Luke and Mara reached the conference room, it was already half full of Wedge's officers and advisors. They occupied seats around two-thirds of the main table and chairs behind. Several seats at the table, those nearest the main doors, were being kept conspicuously empty. Wedge sat at the head of the table, facing the door, Colonel Tycho Selchu beside him. They were huddled in conference, though Wedge spotted Luke as he entered and waved the Jedi Master up to the head of the table again. There was noise from the hall, and a group of 10 or 12 people turned into the conference room. Luke knew several of them by sight. Pwo, first of the council to enter and sit, was a Quarren. Quarren, roughly humanoid in shape, sometimes tended to unnerve humans and near-humans because of their looks. They were an aquatic species with squid-like heads. The Quarren as a culture did not deserve this reaction, but in Luke's estimation, Counselor Pwo did. Luke knew him to be a grasping, politically carnivorous being who was no friend of the Jedi. Chelch Dravad of Corellia sat to Pwo's right, and Fjor Rodan of Kaminor sat beside him. The two human males, both of middle age, and with the confident, artificial aura of politicians on display wrapped tightly around them, tended to keep their attention on Pwo rather than making eye contact around the room. Nyuk Nyuv, the fourth counselor to enter the room, was a Sullustan. He'd been an opponent of the Jedi ever since joining the Advisory Council. He sat to Pwo's left. Nyuv was the last council member to enter. The remaining members of the council's company appeared to be aides and guards. Wedge said, "Counselors, welcome to Bor..." Pwo held up a hand. "General Antilles, you address not only the Advisory Council, but the Chief of State." Wedge blinked, then his gaze moved to the clasp being used to hold Pwo's robes together. Made of gold, it was the New Republic symbol surrounded by stars. Vorsk Thalia had occasionally worn it. Luke saw Wedge struggle with his response. Pwo's rise to the position of Chief of State was not by any stretch of the imagination a legal one, but in these unsettled circumstances, it might just be a practical reality. "Congratulations on your promotion," Wedge said. Pwo stared at Wedge, impatience evident in his body language. "We should begin. First, I want to reassure you all that the government of the New Republic is in fine working order. Drawing on the emergency authority that has fallen to us with Borsk Felia's death, and with the temporary disarray the Senate finds itself in, the Advisory Council has assumed the reins of power. We are in communication with planetary governments from all over the New Republic, which are acknowledging our leadership and awaiting orders." Luke and Mara exchanged glances. Wedge responded to Pwo's statement with only a nod. Pwo waited, as if expecting more, and then, after an uncomfortable silence, continued, "We wish to congratulate you on your success here at Borleos, General." "Thank you, but we haven't had any success yet. We seized this facility through use of overwhelming force, which says nothing about either side in the conflict."
"Yes, of course," Pwo said. "You've done very well in seizing the initiative, in anticipating the needs of the New Republic and acting on them. But now we need to bring your operation back into the New Republic command structure. Sien Sov remains supreme commander of our armed forces, and you'll continue taking orders from him. Here is the first set."
Nyuk Nyuv sent a data card skidding across the tabletop. Wedge caught it, then slotted it into his data pad. Pwo continued,
"What we need from you, General Antilles, is for Borleos to stand as a fortress against the Yuuzhan Vong. The Vong won't be able to tolerate the thought of a New Republic-controlled military base so close to Coruscant, on such a prominent hyperspace crossroads, and so they'll come against you here. This will give us crucial time to regroup and then to come and relieve you. Once we've done so, we can use Borleos to stage the recapture of Coruscant. You must hold here at all costs. Can we count on you?"
Wedge nodded. "Counselor Pwo, I'm afraid I have to turn down your assignment.